today I'm here with Aaron, who is co-founder of Gorilla Nation. And Aaron, why don't you tell us a little about who you are and what it is you guys do?
Well, I'm a native Californian, born and raised, lived most of my life over there. I was a professional student at one point in my life. I got a CPA, JD, and an MBA at Santa Barbara for undergrad and University of Wisconsin Madison for an MBA. And then actually went into the trifecta and got went to UCLA for my JD. And I started my career in the entertainment industry. My grandfather was a movie producer in the 50s and 40s, and my family's been in, had a career in entertainment. And early on, I worked at the Fable William Morris mailroom. After all that stuff, I just, after all that education, I decided to become a professional mailman. And after I realized I wasn't that interested in entertainment, I went out and started my own first internet company that was built around creating a entertainment community site centered around young celebrities. And I started that back in 98 with my business partner, Brian Fitzgerald, who joined me early 99. And we quickly realized that that business was difficult to do sort of at that time where there was sort of an internet ad recession at that point in time, and we morphed into an ad rep firm, and that's where Gorilla Nation became out of. We were working with a company that was broking our ads for our site, Celebrity Boulevard, and they were taking a good commission. We realized that, you know, our skill sets were really in sort of the business aspect and not necessarily building a site, and we morphed our business into an ad rep company.
So you've taken, so firstly on your grandfather, so would he have actually worked inside a studio system?
My grandfather was a independent movie producer. He actually came to the States from Poland, and he moved initially to Detroit, and his brother and my grandfather had a chain of movie theaters. And I believe out in the late 30s, early 40s, he moved to Los Angeles, and shortly after coming to Los Angeles, he started producing independent movies. He actually cast Leonard Nimoy in his first feature film, and he was one of the great B-movie producers of the day. And so since then, my uncle, Bob Broder, started and ran a very successful literary talent agency called Broder, Cohen, Wedoffner, which was acquired by ICM. And my father has run for the past 30 years a very successful business management company where they manage the investment and taxes for lots of important entertainment industry figures.
So basically what you're saying is you've been around the business of entertainment for a long time, and then what you're doing with Gorilla Nation is taking that expertise and bringing that to web publishers.
That's correct. You know, I spent, you know, several years around Hollywood agencies, and Hollywood agencies are, you know, they represent writers, directors, film producers, composers, editors, and we wanted to, you know, once we went to the Celebrity Boulevard model, once we started talking to ad rep companies, we realized that a media rep was very similar to a Hollywood agency, and that we're an agency rep for web publishers, and it's really sort of a natural extension out of what I learned at the Hollywood agencies. A lot of things transfer over, such as you have to learn how to maintain clients, you have to learn how to set client expectations, you have to learn how to pitch clients. It's very similar to the world of, you know, Hollywood agencies, other than the fact that your clients are websites as opposed to people.
And probably some of these guys that are just doing it on their own and very popular websites, their egos are probably about the same size as some of the celebrities, aren't they?
That is correct. That is correct. You just have to know some of the famous celebrity bloggers, and they certainly fit that bill.
Yeah, fair enough. And so you start off actually running a site, and then Fiji moved to repping because you understood the business side of better. Is that a correct understanding?
That's correct. Also, back when we switched to repping was around 2001, and there was very, you know, at that point in time, the brand ad revenue that was spent online, and we were always interested, even from the get-go of repping, to focusing on movie and celebrity websites, because our goal at that point in time, 2001, movie studios were spending a significant portion of their money building out their own web platforms or websites, and very little money marketing those sites online. To the extent that they were marketing, they were really only working with, they probably spent 90% of their budgets for portals, and those budgets weren't very significant. So at that point in time, we felt that there was a great opportunity to help movie studios connect with audiences online, and in that vein, we ended up signing up some of the leading independent movie information sites, such as Rotten Tomatoes, which is in Zimbabwe, News Corp, or IGN, and then News Corp, you know, Box Office Mojo, Joe Blow, Dark Horizons, and a litany of Inequal News, and a litany of other sites, and that's a great way to reach, you know, film enthusiasts, and then we started signing other sites to reach that elusive film fan, such as leading comic sites, anime sites, scary movie sites, where they could properly market, let's say, a science fiction thriller across a grouping of science fiction sites and movie sites. So everything at the initial starting point of Celebrity Boulevard was built around ad rep and to service movie studios on both the theatrical and as well as the DVD release set.
So your focus on traffic is entertainment movie type traffic. It's not, if I come to you with a dating site or a sports site, that's not going to be your kind of fit.
No, that was early on. Since then, we've really, you know, grown into a variety of verticals. Right now, we're focused across 37 different verticals. We represent a number of marquee properties, which include Marvel.com, StarWars.com, you know, some of the aforementioned film sites. We represent a lot of leading celebrity blog sites, such as Superficial, Pick as a New Blog. We represent, you know, Millsbury, one of the largest children's sites. So we're really still entertainment and lifestyle focused, but we do represent, you know, a variety of sites that fill in, you know, both narrow categories, such as, you know, anime, comic book, science fiction, hunting, fishing, you know, enthusiasts, as well as broader categories, which would be, you know, leading film sites, leading video game news and information sites, leading music sites, and celebrity gossip sites. In addition to those categories, we also reach, you know, and represent a lot of the leading sites catering to women, which would include, you know, general female interest sites, style sites, fashion sites, sites appealing to the fashionistas, and celebrity gossip.
So what kind of annual volume of ad sales are you managing?
Well, our, you know, our business is really morphed in two, and I can speak to that later, but, you know, right now, our total company's revenues last year hovered around $4 to $7 million, and we experienced, you know, anywhere between 50 to 200% growth based on the year since 2002, and we expect 2008 to be, to continue that trend.
So, I don't understand, like, how a deal like this works at all. This is really interesting. I'm really happy to talk to you about this because this is new. So let's say I have a site and I've got, actually one that I know quite well, maybe we can do this as our base example because I talk with them a lot, is, are you familiar with Fark.com? F-A-R-K?
Yes.
So Drew and I talk quite a lot, you know, he tells me all kinds of stories about his site, and I've talked through a lot of the issues, and this is the side that I don't understand it was, the branding side. So you come along and represent someone like Drew, is that correct?
That is correct. So we would approach Drew, or Drew would approach us, and we discuss his site, and we would sign a representation contract where we would go out and agree that we would act as their exclusive premium ad sales entity. That would directly replace any internal sales team that they would have. Our direct responsibility would be going out to brand marketers that would be relevant for his site so far. For example, probably caters to a 12 to 34 year old, mostly male audience. And
probably
we target those.
Likely 12 to 13, but yes.
Yeah. And we target,
we target
those marketers that would be interested in reaching that, adolescently minded yet mature male, through, you know, a variety of integrated promotions as well as banner media. So in addition to just selling banners on the site, whether that's, you know, and there's different ad formats, whether it's, you know, a rectangular ad or a, you know, a longer skinnier ad, which we call a sort of a super banner leaderboard, or we go out and we do custom units such as creating custom advertorial, actually reskinning the page, or creating, you know, very interesting programs that can engage with the reader through vehicles other than just a mere ad. And we go out and we pitch those programs to marketing partners, and then we agree to rates, we agree to the specs of the buy, the duration of the buy, the budget of the buy. And once we run that campaign, we end up using our ad server, which the publisher will use, or DoubleClick client, and they either have an internal server where they take our code, or they're just hard-coded on their sites, our ad tags. And they run the campaign, and after the campaign is over, we agree to a commission arrangement, and they then will receive the net proceeds after we earn our commission.
So from that side, here's what's interesting to me. Let's say I'm Fark.com, and you've gone to Procter & Gamble, and you've cut a big deal to run an ad for some sort of, I don't know, some new deodorant or something. Let's say they're making a deodorant. I don't actually know if they make deodorant, so I imagine they do. They then give you $100,000 to run ads on my site. So you then take the $100,000, and you then work with them to come up with creatives. You give me those creatives. They then run on my site, and then I end up getting a percentage of that money. Is that how it works?
More or less, the only main difference that you mentioned is that the agency, which is representing the advertiser, the advertising agency, will create standard creatives that will run across a large group of sites. They'll run not only through FAR, but through other male-interested, you know, or male-oriented publishers, and they'll use that same creative to run across, you know, a collection of sites, some of which we may represent, some of which we may not. And if there are any custom elements that we would create, such as, let's say, reskinning FAR.com, we would do that, but we more often than not will use the assets that the agency will provide us to create a consistent messaging on FARC.com, although that custom skin will be unique to FARC and will be different from what may run on other sites.
So you actually want to totally reskin FARC.com, like change the look and feel. That would be one of the major things.
That could be one major thing. We could, you know, we could set up a, you know, a custom editorial calendar where they can sponsor certain, you know, let's say, new seeds of the day. We can build a widget which could be sponsored by FARC.com. They can run a pre-roll video ad. So FARC is actually serving video. We can sell, you know, pre-roll space. There's a variety of instruments that you can do with respect to online media programs these days.
So one of the things, like, I talked to Drew about some of the advertisers happened, and he talked about how, like, sometimes they'll go up on site and they'll just, like, blow right through and he won't even see them. You know, he's getting so much traffic. I mean, how does an advertiser handle that kind of stuff? They give you money for it, and then they, you know, they get, like, 10 clicks and then they're done. Like, How does that work?
Well, there's a lot of, there should be, you know, if advertisers are using, you know, and have access to a very good advertising agency, one of the best parts about online advertising is that the media is very measurable. So, you know, DoubleClick or Atlas or your typical ad server that's used to record ad impressions and ad clicks can, you know, classify that and tell you if a campaign has been successful based on the engagement activities on that ad. In addition to sort of standard flash ads, there's, you know, a whole litany of rich media ads. And rich media ads are ads that you can kind of mouse over in the AdWix standard. You can mouse over and watch a video where you're able to determine not whether or not someone clicked on an ad, but whether or not someone rolled over an ad and saw something or played around with that ad in a meaningful way without leaving Fark.com from its website. So based on those general metrics, they can evaluate what the cost of the ads were and then back into a number of metrics, whether it's a cost per click, a cost per engagement, a cost per time spent on an ad unit to figure out what's been successful or not. In addition to those sort of verifiable metrics, there's a lot of soft metrics which can be associated with custom programs. One of those programs can have a vote function, you know, vote for your favorite, you know, let's say Batman movie or vote for your favorite, you know, video game of all time, where it could be sponsored or promoted by a particular marketing partner, and you can collect that data to tell that to see if people are engaged within that message.
So in a case like that, would you ever sell in a rate that's not CPM? Would you sell like based on a cost per action, like for example, the number of votes collected?
No, but what you would do is that those are called more like integrated media programs, and there would be sort of a fixed fee associated with building out a program. So if you go far beyond voting, that's just a typical one example, but you would build, you know, whatever custom program you're doing, you would normally, you know, assign a fixed fee to that component, and you would not be basing things off of the CPA.
So is there anything that could get you to move your business to any kind of CPA, or will you only ever do CPM?
Right now, what we're noticing is that there are CPA, you know, programs. Most of those programs are occurring through remnant providers. Whatever way any type of media is being backed out, there are CPA programs, so if you ever see any, you know, dating ads online where they have, you know, a seductive looking woman on the site, and they're clicking, that advertiser in the back end is looking for how many sign-ups they're getting. If sometimes a lot of telecommunications messaging, whether you see a T-Mobile ad, they need to be collecting and then evaluating a vendor for how many phone subscribers they receive. But those are generally bought through remnant media providers, and that media generally will only run after your brand ads are completely exhausted.
Right.
So we do not specialize in remnant media. There's a lot of companies that are very good at that, that have sophisticated technologies for ad optimization, and that's a whole different sphere. And that's, you know, that remnant media game is very different than selling high touch point custom programs that online brand advertising is requires these days.
And that's what's fascinating to me, because that's the area I know more about. What I don't understand is, because my feeling would be is that the concept of just selling CPM, you know, flat going in Procter & Gamble and being able to get high CPMs for advertising is going to go away. And we're going to move towards CPA-type advertising. And even on a CPM basis, it'll just, it's where the brand advertising, those ads will still run, but they'll run first because they're in a higher CPA. Do you feel that I'm incorrect in saying something like that?
I don't know necessarily if that's going to happen online. Right now, you know, if let's just say you want it, people are looking for impactful programs. That can be through typical banners, which would be, you know, let's just say you'd robot ads and you want to own that inventory for the, let's just say the Thursday night before a movie's coming out. So in addition to watching a movie trailer on NBC or Fox on that Thursday night, you want to have roadblock media on top sites that are reaching the audience that you're trying to get to see that movie. I don't know if the publishers that are the largest and most desirable, will not sell that media on a CPA. So unless, you know, the entire industry changes where, you know, every movie studio or every video game company or every CPG is trying to, you know, price things based on a CPA, I don't think it's going to happen. They also need to come up with very, you know, hard and measurable metrics. You know, for example, let's say you're doing a video game promotion. I'm not sure how you would have that on CPA. You know, certain products will not lend themselves to CPAs. So I don't believe that's going to occur. However, I do believe that, you know, over time, marketers will be smarter and smarter with their money and allocate that in the most efficient platforms. And normally, branding metrics, which have metrics such as, you know, backing into an effective cost per click or an effective cost per engagement on a rich media ad, those tend to be softer metrics, nonetheless, are metrics that brand marketers will use. And I'm not so certain that brand marketers will ever adopt metrics as strict as a CPA.
When I say CPA, I mean anything that's requiring some kind of an action, whether it's a lead, a click, or something. I'm talking about some kind of an action being taken rather than paying on a per impression.
I'm not seeing that yet, and I think, if anything, that's going away. That doesn't mean, I think the other confusing part is, let's take T-Mobile as an example. T-Mobile may have two very different initiatives. One initiative may be a CPM focus, where the goals of the campaign are to change the perception of a product, introduce a product, enhance a certain feature set. Those are, again, brand goals. Those are software goals. And for that, they are looking for integrated media programs, big ideas to contextually tie your product to the audience and the stuff that you're reading or watching some type of video on. T-Mobile, on the other hand, we have a whole other set of another initiative where they are they are trying to push cell phone plans, and that may be based purely on a CPA. Those plans may go to a CPA basis. They are evaluated on a CPA basis, except they are choosing, selecting their remnant providers, and from my understanding, they are still paying based on CPM or a CPC, a cost per click, and then the remnant media providers are using their app technology to make sure that they're optimized properly so that they're making the highest eCPM or effective CPM possible by making sure that the apps are on sites where people are most likely to click.
So if, let's say T-Mobile has a goal of changing the perception of a product, because they've had a bad perception in some way and they want to make a good perception, so something would traditionally be bought on a CPM scale, why wouldn't they design into the campaign that, okay, we're going to run this in the social networking site and we're going to allow people to come in and play the T-Mobile game, and each first person that comes in and plays the T-Mobile game will know by the end of it that their perception has been changed somewhat, and then pay based on the number of those interactions, which they can then shoot to scale out across different social media sites. Is that not their kind of thinking? Do you see it heading in that direction, or is it just...
I don't see that the ping out based on those perceptions is happening, but what is happening is that if you created a program where there was very little activity, so let's use your example, and people were playing with some game built on a social network or on specific type of content site, and users are not engaging with that, and that is a metric that they're looking for to determine whether or not they've been successful at gaining a consumer's brand perception or engaging the consumer regarding a brand. If you, let's just say, had a far lower engagement rate because you're not having as many people play that game, that agency may penalize you on the next campaign, and based upon the fact that you didn't perform as well at another site, you may not make the next plan. So they will use performance metrics just to assess whether or not they want to include you in plan, but they're not going to pay you based upon those performance metrics.
And that decision-making, is the reason they don't want to do this kind of CPA type or interactive based billing? Is that a decision more on the side of the publisher or is it more on the side of the advertiser? Who's pushing it that way?
It's mostly by publishers, but it's been adopted that advertisers know that they're not going to go to Yahoo or MySpace and believe that Yahoo or MySpace will not accept ads based on those pricing methods. They only accept ads based upon CPMs for the coveted inventory, and it's always been that way.
So would the advertisers do it if they could?
Some would. Some absolutely would, except you rarely see things being done that way. If advertisers are really into efficiency, they will just demand either lower CPMs or in very, very certain cases, lower CPC pricing, but you will rarely ever see CPA pricing from a brand advertiser.
Right.
On those initiatives where they're looking to change or alter or enhance a product image. Again, if it's more towards, sign up for this, job listing board or sign up for Expedia, you will see those campaigns based on CPA.
Right. So then you want to be able to go into an advertiser, let's say T-Mobile, and they say that we want to launch a new product and change the perceptions of an existing one. You'll then work with them for their goals for the campaign. You'll get those clear, and then you'll work across your network of sites to then get that campaign out. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Right. What about, does rebrokering happen? Like, do you go to other agencies and get on for bigger reach that way?
No. We only work directly with our publishers. Now, we could work with a group of people that own more than one site, but we do not work through other brokers. It's just our belief that it's important to work directly with the publishers, because if you're going to come up with custom programs, you need to work with that very specific person or owner or person whoever's in charge of the site.
Is that industry-wide, or is that just how you guys work?
I think it is industry-wide with respect to brand ad selling. With respect to performance ad selling, so let's just say a company is involved in selling someone's unsold or remnant space, that party may very well work with a variety of ad brokers to fill that unsold space. But when going out to sell the premium, best-in-class ad space, that is done industry-wide, just through an agent and publisher relationship, if that site does not have a sales force. Most large sites, or the top, let's say, 50 sites, the vast majority have a deep internal sales team. Some use independent web companies, but if the site's big enough, they often will have an internal team selling their own media.
Would that again come back to this being high touch and very specific, and that's the reason why you can't do that? Because it would seem like you do lose some scale that way.
That is correct. You definitely, it's all high touch, which requires, intimate knowledge of the market, great salespeople, and for a lot of independent sites that don't have the resources, they just can't afford or don't have a desire or energy to go build out an internal sales team.
So actually, that leads on to the next question. That's nicely done. Thank you. There.
You're welcome.
Let's say you're a big publisher, and you've been running your inventory yourself. You maybe got any friends to start selling it. It's not growing too much, so you get rid of him and you get someone to represent you. But then what happens is you get to a certain scale, and by the time you get a certain scale, then it suddenly starts to make sense to bring it in house again. Don't you have an automatic a cap on how big you can grow things?
You could. You have to depend. It really depends on the individual publisher. So a lot of publishers, for example, let's take Marvel.com, or publishers that are owned by parents that aren't advertising-focused businesses. They're, you know, the revenue that they're generating through their site pales in comparison, let's just say, to the licensing revenue that Marvel's earning or Lucas is earning through StarWars.com. In those instances, they're not looking to squeeze every last dollar out of their ad sales arms. What they're looking to do is have a clean, efficient solution for an outside sales from an outside sales agency. A lot of independent publishers also need to reach, very few independent publishers reach either the brand, have their properties reach the brand equity level where it makes sense to bring it in-house, or have the total amount of inventory where it makes sense to bring it in-house, just due to the sheer cost of setting up an internal sales force. If you have a big enough site, you cannot simply serve a site by having one salesperson. You need to have sales planners. You need to have ad traffickers. You need to have multiple salespeople. And finding those people, especially competent people, is very difficult. In addition to all that, there's right now a lot of clutter and noise in the market. And what we're seeing more and more is that marketers are preferring to work through rep firms for sites that are everything but the very large and very top tier online, in the sense that they just can't be bothered about buying, let's say, five different celebrity blogs directly through those celebrity blog owners. They'd rather have a company that aggregated those five, was sophisticated enough to build a media program that may transcend all five sites, and so to create something more powerful than any one of the sites can do on their own. So from those standpoints, there's a variety of reasons why we believe publishers, you know, certain publishers will always choose to use or work with the rep company. And I think the last point to that, which I haven't touched on, is that 30% of, generally around 25 to 35% of a site's traffic is international. And since last year, Guerrilla Nation is making really strong attempts to grow and build out its international sales force. So we have a big team out in Toronto, and we're looking to hire and establish components for our business in the UK and Australia during this year.
Well, you raise a very good point there, because that's a big problem for a lot of people. How the heck do you monetize international? What kind of CPMs do you have to do?
Well, in international markets right now, they're running more. They're running ads that are mostly random in nature, because there aren't a lot of sophisticated sales of .com or sites that are based in the U.S. to media buyers in foreign markets. And based on our initial success in the Canadian market, we're very confident that we're going to be able to build out a end-to-end ad rep company, which can effectively sell the .com ad inventory, you know, across the globe.
Okay, so I mean, as I talked with Greg Singh about this about 8 months ago, and sat down and said, look, what are the biggest issues you're dealing with right now? And he said his number one thing is so much international traffic that's not monetized, or not monetized well. What can you say to someone like Greg?
Well, I say you have to investigate the local landscape and find a good ad rep partner that can effectively sell your site. I think there's also certain customs to each particular company, country, and you have to make sure that you're dealing with the right ad rep firm. You have to check for their reputation and how their ability is to sell brand with respect to the vertical you're in. So if you're an entertainment site and you're working with a rep company, mostly sells technology, you're probably going to be working with the wrong company. I also think that you need to staff internal resources to make sure that you're able to adapt and customize plans that are solely visible to people in foreign countries. So sticking with recent example, you're going to have to make sure that you have somebody in charge that can help expedite and facilitate rolling out geo-targetable regions or geo-targetable integration opportunities. And I think you need to work with a very strong rep company in those markets. One thing we're trying to do is try to create an end-to-end solution so sites like Rags can turn to a single company that can manage, you know, their international inventory in hopefully a variety of countries. We may not be in every one, but we at least want to be in the largest ones which cater English language sites.
I imagine the 80-20 rule would kick in. I mean, which would be the countries you'd care about? Oh, so you only do English. You wouldn't do other languages?
Well, right now, I mean, for starters, right now, we just want to make sure that we're set up and rolling in the United Kingdom as well as Australia and New Zealand. I think once we're in those markets, we'll be able to gauge, you know, how to sell into Southeast Asia and how to sell into Europe, but we first need to get there before we can extend ourselves any further.
Well, as an Australian, can I suggest you prioritize Australia and forget about New Zealand?
Yeah, you got it.
We have to, for those listening, there's an ongoing Australia-New Zealand rivalry night.
I know. I think that in a Brit, we'll make sure that we don't go focus on Ireland before Great Britain.
Exactly. So another guy I haven't actually talked to yet, but we'll may interview at some point, is John, but I don't know how to say his last name, John Battelli,
yep.
John Battelli,
yeah.
Is he doing exactly the same thing as you?
Very, very similar. They are acting as an ad rep company. They are occupying sort of a different part of the internet ecosystem where they right now are currently focusing a lot more on, they're focusing primarily on blogs. They're focusing primarily on tech blogs, although I know that they are expanding. And they are doing a very good job acting as a rep company. So it's great to see another company being successful.
Are there not many companies that are doing well with what you guys do?
No, not in the U.S., and that's for a variety of reasons. It's a much tougher proposition. A lot of people that are coming into the internet space, they're primarily coming up with, you know, startups are primarily coming up with, you know, different tech plays that can be scalable, whether it's a widget maker or, you know, an ad server. They're addressing those aspects of the model, and most new startups are not addressing sort of like the media services space. And if they are addressing it, they are usually having underlying technologies to address it. Well, we have a, you know, very robust you know, ad platform and ad ops system that we've built for our publishers and us to take advantage of, it's still primarily a high touch point sell. So if we're not selling high touch point ad campaigns, everything else is sort of irrelevant, and most people just for whatever reason have decided not to enter in that space.
So that's because there's not a lot of competition, or is it not a fast growing market?
It is fast growing. I think you have to build, you know, surrounding businesses around your core rep end, or, you know, you have to go in an international way, or you have to really think through, you know, some of the weaknesses of just being a pure service provider or pure rep company. But I think it's also very hard, and you have to get to scale. You have to rep enough sites that you're meaningful to advertisers. And in order to sign those sites, you better have campaigns for them, otherwise they're going to be pretty displaced pretty quickly. So for most companies, I found that it's really the chicken and the egg. And I think the other thing that's special about us is that rather than focusing only on the what we would call the fat end of the long tail, we really define the term mid-tail. And mid-tail, we like to refer to sites that are really important niche affinity content sites that have meaningful audiences and meaningful marketing opportunities, and we try to represent as many of those sites as possible in our existing categories so that marketers can create a scalable, you know, media campaign reaching millions of people by aggregating 8 to 10 or 8 to 20 really strong sites. Typical rep companies in the past have gone out and focused only on the very top sites, and those top sites are the most likely to potentially leave them, and then they're left with nothing, and then their businesses don't grow. So by focusing on the mid-sides and then going up, we've been much more successful for those companies that are focused on the top sides than they've gone down.
And that would seem to be your market too, that sort of size, isn't it?
That's correct.
Too small and not too big.
That's correct. Although we are working with several very large sites who take military, for example, one of the top three or four kids site that's owned by General Mills, and they just, you know, they are not experts in ad selling. They still want to make sure that they have safe and secure and conservative ad placements and being taught by a company that's very very, very good in the space, and it's been a learning experience for them, and they're getting great brand ads on their, you know, their community site for kids. And so it really depends on the business objectives of the particular publisher and what they're looking for. And based on that, sometimes you very well may represent very, very large sites.
Do you ever do deals around other stuff, for example, lead generation? And I'll give you an example. Let's say a site like Fark, he could build in a lead generation campaign where people are shown offers every so often, like you know, a debt offer or, you know, some other, you know, and they're annoying sometimes, but offers that where the intent is to be reasonably relevant, and build that into a branding campaign. Do you ever do creative stuff like that, or do you only just focus on CPM stuff?
We only focus on CPM stuff, but we will do creative stuff if it's surrounding a branding experience. But we're not trying to position ourselves or sell ourselves as a performance-based company for purely performance campaigns. However, we do want to create engaging, you know, engaging, measurable, integrated media programs that benefit brand marketers.
Hmm. What about behavioral? How do you work with a Takoda or Revenue Science or someone like that?
We don't. I mean, behavioral is very different than contextual. I mean, if you think about ourselves, we are a contextual ad sales company. We are repping premium content, and because of that, we personally believe that premium content trumps behavioral. So if you've got a great auto site, you don't need to run a behavioral campaign to reach those, you know, users that are intending to purchase an automotive site. Similarly, if you're on a great movie site, you don't need to run a campaign to reach people who are most likely to see movies. Behavioral is an important media vehicle online, but should be used as an additive factor to an online campaign, not as a substitute for running media on content sites. Really, behavioral really comes into play when you're having sort of premium inventory within a specific user always being sold out, whether you're in an auto category, a finance category, an entertainment category, and marketers just can't buy enough of that inventory, then they want to look towards behavioral solutions to reach users who are interested in an alternative manner.
Do you ever put together a deal with an advertiser and a publisher and have one or both parties try to work around you and cut you out of the deal?
That has happened. It's rare, but it has happened before. Generally, it's not intentional. In most instances, it's just one or the other. It's an advertiser that's trying to circumvent, or it's a publisher that's trying to circumvent. It doesn't happen as often as one may think, but, you know, it happens every now and then.
I mean, so is that something you actually actively have to watch for in your business, is it?
We do, but it's not something that's completely disruptive towards it. You really have to build publisher relationships based on trust, and you've got to quickly figure out those publishers that may, or advertisers that may be untrustworthy.
Right. So if you find a guy that goes in and you bring someone to him and then he cuts out of the deal, then you just drop him and you don't work with him again?
Well, no. We get paid because we have an exclusive contract and we would pursue that. And then going forward, we would decide whether or not if we want to do a relationship to make sure that the publisher understands the agreement that they signed.
Right. Okay. Of all the deals you've done, what would you say is the deal you're most proud of?
There's several deals that we're really proud of. I think we did Vanguard in a variety of categories. We really brought, early on, we rep still to this day a very strong collection of movie sites. We're proud of representing each and every one of sort of our top 5 or 6 sites, whether that be Cool News, Dark Horizons, Joe Blow, Movie Web, or Box Office Mojo. Those are all class sites, and we've represented them for a number of years and been able to perform for them for, you know, in excess of 6 years. So we're really proud of that. We're proud of, identifying the celebrity blogging category and identifying such strong sites as Pink is a New Blogging, The Superficial, before people even realized that celebrity blogging was going to be a huge trend.
What is celebrity blogging?
Celebrity gossip sites that are basically people commenting on celebrity blog gossip from their own point of view and coming up with TMZ or Perez Hilton. Those are, you know, those are other examples of sites. And finding really good sites like that. I mean, there's no one favorite that stands out, but there's, you know, a good 10 to 20 that we're extremely proud of.
So how do you find a new client like one of those guys? How does that start?
We have a very big business development department that's sole job is to go out and cover verticals, make sure they're aware of all the leading new sites that are popping up, as well as existing sites. And we also get a lot of referrals based from happy publishers or advertisers that believe that the site would be a great addition to Guerrilla Asia Media.
How many
We right now have, I would say, probably at least 10 people between, you know, going out and securing new publishers, re-signing new publishers, and then managing those relationships day to day.
And so they're going out and figuring out who the guys actually are, researching the market a lot, figuring out who they are, and then finding ways to get through them, and then you go and cut a deal.
That's correct.
And who actually does the deals with those guys, the deals, or then you going to do the actual deal?
No, we have a business development team that's self-sufficient. They interact with our legal department, and they go out and do the deals.
So what actually day-to-day stuff are you involved with, or do you more just focus on managing and running a business?
Mostly, our business right now is reached a scale where it's a lot of management running the business. We have one of the things we're also really proud of is that we've built, you know, a really interesting company with lots of bright people that are leaders in their own right, and we really defer those people to let them run their departments and manage their teams. However, they're always, you know, free to come in and speak with us, and we're always going to them if we have any great ideas of new sites of our own or approaches that we should be taking with a specific department. But more or less, we really are trying to let our group leaders lead their individual units.
So if the site's running, let's go back to me being Fuck.com again. Drew's currently using Maxim to do his brand advertising. Why would you tell Drew he should switch from Maxim to Guerrilla Nation?
Well, you know, I wouldn't right now. Maxim may be doing a very good job. One of the things I think publishers value is they value our commentary. There's also a lot of vertical ad networks popping up in blended opportunities where destination sites are also selling media on third-party sites. So it's really an evolving landscape. Really what comes down to the question is you have to ask yourself, how much are you getting paid? What are you running effective campaigns? Are you running ads that are relevant to your site? So a lot of publishers want to make sure that, hey, I may be getting paid a little bit more, but, you know, I'd like to also run ads that are contextually relevant. And you have to seek out sites that are if you're a publisher, you have to seek out partners that you feel can be a good ad-selling partner to your site. The issue that Maxim faces is another vertical networks is that Maxim has a built-in incentive to sell media on their site since they own it and they don't have a revenue share. Working with Guerrilla Asia Media, you don't have that issue if you're working with a rep company that is not using a known site to sell a website. So you have to worry about conflicts. You have to worry about you also have to worry about who's doing a good job and who has expertise in that category. You also have to worry about, you know, overextension in a particular category. So if you're working with a rep site and you feel like you're getting the attention you need, you've got to think about other opportunities as well. So there's a variety of calculations that each individual publisher has to make when assessing who to work with.
And do you have a handle for a publisher? Will you handle, like, everything, or, like, including rent and all that sort of stuff? Or do you say to the publisher, well, we'll handle just your high-end stuff, but you're on your own for the rent and the other stuff?
That's what we do right now. So right now we are not focused on the remnant.
It's a big guy like Drew. He doesn't care about any advertising. He just wants checks. And if someone would date him to handle everything, I think he'd be happy about it. Is there a reason why you don't do that sort of stuff?
Yeah, you know, it's about an area of focus. Right now, you know, the remnant space is a whole, you know, different ad space altogether. What we're noticing is who controls sort of the premium ad, basically controls the sites. Our sites are mostly hard-coded with our ad tags, which means that we are first to run an ad. We're first call with respect to an ad server. So if we have brand campaigns running, our self-serves ahead of remnant. And, you know, I think that it will be a broader question where end-to-end solutions still aren't here yet. There's still a little bit of time, but in the end of the day, you're probably going to have to be able to offer both. At our current size, we just haven't gotten around to focusing on the remnant side of things yet.
Are you familiar with the Rubicon project?
Yes.
I interviewed Frank a couple of months ago, and that seems to be solving that exact problem. I mean, I guess is that something that's pretty compatible with what you're doing?
Yes, ad exchanges to property of companies like White Media, those will solve those problems. And I think because we do control, you know, premium sales, we'll be the first company to be able to test those and really, you know, kind of use them as an additive solution to our sales. In the end of the day, though, there's still such great differences. You know, disparities are anywhere from, you know, 5 to 50 times. Publisher will get paid anywhere from 5 to 50 times on average on a brand ad compared to a remnant ad. Hopefully, people like Frank can up the ECP on remnants where the disparity is not as great.
Okay. Is there anything that we should talk about that we have not?
Nothing really. I think it's really been a good summary for our business. I think the only thing else that we'd like to kind of make note of is that we are constantly coming up with new solutions for our publishers aside from merely representing their ad inventory. We're looking out for broad programs that we can sort of offer them where we can ferret out who's offering a better program, where we act sort of as a wholesaler in that respect. We're also trying to develop ad technology such as our ad ops system to make managing publishers and publishers getting information a much more seamless experience. In addition to that, we're trying to develop ad technologies. For example, we're building a syndicated video player where sites will have access to this, where they can host their own video or upload their own videos, as well as share across other grow relation sites, which will then create video advertising opportunities on their sites. So we're really looking to create a broader, act as a broader business partner with their sites and make sure that we're helping a lot of sites that may not have either the expertise, the time, or know-how to basically build better platforms and create new monetization strategies that they may not have thought of.
Cool. Any particular kinds of publishers that you'd like to work with or not?
No, right now we're pretty happy with, if Pareto wanted to switch ad reps, we'd be really happy about that. But we're really happy about the categories we're in. We're always checking around and looking to build out other areas that complement our entertainment and lifestyle content sites. The launch of Jan Kids was really exciting. We're really excited about working with larger publishers in the international markets. And once we kind of get through the UK and Australia, I think that we'll be looking to get into a couple of verticals as well.
Cool. Well, Aaron, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.